Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board Holiday Hangover Edition, Monday, November 28th. Hopefully all of you loyal listeners out there had an enjoyable Thanksgiving. You didn't get caught up in some of the Black Friday craziness, like our friend Payne Insider, who was seen up in the Pacific Northwest throwing Nike boxes on the floor to find a new pair of kicks.
What freaking animals would do such a thing? I just saw that tweet. It's like a melee there. What were they doing? Fighting each other for sneakers?
Have no idea. Sometimes I feel like that's how people get in sports books when they're trying to fight for numbers. But it's simply incredible when you look at folks trying to save, 10, 15%, maybe 25% on a good day. But you know what, Payne? Being of the Jewish faith, I don't have to spend as much time in this Black Friday craziness. There is none of this Christmas hoopla. So I feel like I can take a step back and take full advantage of Cyber Monday rather than going into the trenches with a lot of those heathens.
I don't think you have to own a Hanukkah bush to do Cyber Monday. That's kind of
no. That's
my
what
thing
I'm saying.
Here. I can purchase things in my computer while I'm sitting here on my boxer shorts, which I already made a purchase this morning. Not going to reveal what that is because the person it's for listens to this. So already attacked some Cyber Monday sales.
All right, I'm glad you're keeping that under wraps. As always, the Bet the Board podcast, powered by Bet Online, with your big game breakdown for tonight's Monday Night Football clash between the Packers and Eagles, courtesy of the American Gaming Association. Some bad news for folks out there who are expecting a movie review Monday. We'll be putting that on hiatus until next week. Payne and I will do our due diligence. Encourage you guys to follow Payne on Twitter, at Payne Insider. And you can follow me there as well, at Todd Furman. And Payne, we may as well jump right into what we saw last night between the Denver Broncos and the Kansas City Chiefs. Denver ends up closing a 3.5-point home favorite, takes a little bit of money from the professionals. It looks, by all intents and purposes, they have no chance to cover. The game will most likely stay right around the total. Benny Fowler breaks a big play, 24-16. Broncos backers are feeling good. Then all of a sudden, the wheels start to come off that much-hyped Denver defense.
Probably the best game of the weekend, I would say, just due to the... I love a defensive game, and that's what we got early on. I love the old school. I love every play mattering. Won't lie, the vodka kicked into the system on the 4 or 5 day binge. Passed out a little bit on the couch watching that game. Finally crawled myself into bed where I saw the last 3 minutes of it. So that was obviously a big game, and bigger as a Dolphins fan. A Chiefs win puts the Dolphins right now in the playoffs, but a lot of weird late game scenarios there. I get Fowler going in for the touchdown. I think you're kind of in the moment. I know the Chiefs had no timeouts there with 3 minutes to go. I still believe in that setting, you probably have to get yourself into the end zone. I believe so. And you rely on your defense, the defense that won you a Super Bowl. Wasn't in love with how they didn't attack early on in that drive. They really played prevent defense with Alex Smith, let him complete a few balls early in that drive. And that's what Alex Smith is. He's Mr. Checkdown. So you really don't want to get him in rhythm, allow him to do that early in that drive. You pay your cornerbacks to play man-on-man coverage. I think you send blitzes. I think you kind of unleash Von Miller there. So I think that was the biggest downfall to that game, is the early play calling on defense of that game-tying drive.
Does that game, and you hate to overreact to just a 60-minute sample size, change our expectations of either Kansas City or Denver moving forward? I'll say during the telecast, we knew the game probably meant a lot more to Kansas City given some of their to Denver, given their upcoming schedule, needing to play for a win in overtime. But right now, the Broncos sit at 7-4. They're on the outside looking into the AFC playoff picture. And with an offense that you're never sure what you're going to get, I don't think it's a formality by any stretch that this team will not be able to go back and defend their Super Bowl championship.
Not just these two teams, but you look around the league, and it's extremely tough to find a dominant, complete team. Every single one has a hole. every single one. And it's really going to come down to matchups in the playoffs. You're going to be able to look at your power numbers and say, might not mean as much this year because it's going to be predicated on matchups. You have teams that can't stop the run. You have teams that can't protect quarterbacks. You have teams that are great with the pass rush but don't do much else. So they're, when you look at these teams, not just Denver and Kansas City, there are just a lot of holes. Neither of those teams can really stop the run, so it'll be interesting to see moving forward. But you probably have to give the Chiefs a tick up. I know the last 3 weeks they haven't been very good despite going 2-1 over that stretch. Could have easily gone 0-3. But Justin Houston, what a presence he was. And you look at some of these metrics and these numbers. Tom Mahali has kind of been, you know, a concrete stable in that Chiefs organization, but he's played 444 snaps in that entire defensive line. Houston was already, with one game's performance, the most effective defensive lineman for the entire course of the season.
It'll be interesting to see how Kansas City fares next week when they go on the road to take on the Atlanta Falcons in Denver, on the road to what we'll probably refer to as a neutral site game against the much maligned Jaguars, but more about those two contests either later in the show or on Thursday. Payne, we talked a little bit about the AFC playoff picture. We know Miami gets what could have been a letdown spot. They get the win, albeit not a cover, with that number closing right at 7. The Steelers on Thursday night, a very workmanlike effort against a luckless Indianapolis Colts team. Did we see anything from those teams? Maybe throw the Bills into the mix to try and provide some clarity as to what we should expect from that trio of AFC teams moving forward, fighting for those last couple wildcard spots.
When it comes to the Dolphins, listen, it's the NFL. Wins are hard to come by, and that was about as bad of a spot as you can have for the Dolphins. So, you know, kudos to them for winning. You see what Adam Gase has really done to this franchise. And again, the Chiefs win last night, knocking off Denver, puts Miami in the playoff picture if it were to start today. But you're going to need a healthy offensive line. It's vital. Brandon Albert, Mike Pouncey, Laremy Tunzel all can go because you're not going to have the luxury of facing Jeff Fisher or Chip Kelly every single week. when it comes to the Steelers, again, a team that has a lot of holes, they're going to struggle against teams that are multidimensional, that can run and pass. You look at their schedule. We talked about it last week. It's a very favorable schedule. They might have the edge because, you know, you face a Giants team that's extremely overrated, and then everyone else on that list is extremely beatable. But a ton of holes there for the Steelers. So this could be a team that goes on a nice little run, and that I think is pretty good. And you look at their power numbers are pretty good. They're not as good as their power number right now, but their record might end up being very good based upon that week schedule that they face. And the Bills, just not a good football team. I watched every single snap of that game. The Jaguars were the right side there. You get a big play out of the half. Tyrod Taylor, nice story. Got the big contract. He misses more throws, and it's not just the throws that he's actually missing. It's the ones that mentally he doesn't throw. Like, literally, the ball doesn't leave his hands. Their receiver's just wide open. He misses more throws than it would put another quarterback literally in the Pro Bowl, the amount of throws he misses. He's just not, I hate to say this because he's such a hard worker and he's really come a long ways and he can use his legs and it, you know, really presents some issues for the defense. He's just not a very good quarterback.
Back half of the NFC playoff picture, we mentioned the Giants. We're going to talk about them quite a bit, I'm sure, going competition. But you look at the likes of the Redskins, the Bucks. I guess we can throw the Vikings into the mix, who do some damage if they ultimately get in as wildcard teams. I don't think I'm going out on a limb probably calling the Washington Redskins the most complete team of that trio.
Yeah, the Redskins are an interesting team. The biggest thing for them is they have to be better in the red zone on both sides of the ball if they're truly going to compete. Offensively, you look at them, they're 29th converting red zone trips into touchdowns. Defensively, even worse, they're 30th. They allow opponents to score TDs in the red zone at a 68% clip. So both of those must really improve if they're going to be a serious contender there. The other teams that you mentioned, the Giants are going to be there, obviously. You have a proven quarterback. The offense is doing just enough. It's really the defense. They've been fantastic. The secondary, there's still some question marks there. But for me, you look at the talent they have, and I think maybe it's a chemistry thing. So if they can get better there in the secondary, they've certainly paid some guys there. I think probably a chemistry thing that probably continues to get better. A lot of those guys were beaten and banged up early in the season, so they haven't had a great chance to, you know, play with each other despite it being week 12. So that's going to be a huge key for them. If that chemistry can kind of build in the secondary, really take their defense to an elite level.
One team I want to get your take on, because we saw them struggle yesterday again, albeit in a victory over the New York Jets. Is there anything to be worried about when we talk about the New England Patriots, or is it just, hey, they're going through a midseason hangover, maybe Tom Brady is dealing with some lingering issues? We know Gronkowski left the game against the Jets with no catches due to a back injury, but 22-17 victory, and it probably wasn't even as pretty as the 5-point final margin would lead you to believe. Still the overwhelming favorites to win the Super Bowl. And we know with New England, they're going to get on track at some point. But are these things that we're starting to see kinks in the armor, they're going to come back to haunt them as we get deeper into the season, the games get more meaningful?
I don't want to panic because it's Brady and Belichick. And I think when you look at both sides of the ball, there's some issues. Offensively, I want to chalk that up to just chemistry issues. You alluded to it. Tom's dealing with a knee injury. He's about 70 to 75%. He didn't practice all week. And we saw his timing just a bit off. He missed Gronk on two deep passes, Mitchell in the end zone on another. But I think that probably comes around. You're really messing with a lot of moving parts. You know, Martellus Bennett, new to the system. Gronk, he's been in and out of the lineup. There's just chemistry issues there. Hogan, they're just not on the same page quite yet. It did look a little bit better this week against the Jets. Deion Lewis, now his second week back, you got to find a role for him. It just depends. Week to week, their game plan changes, and sometimes that throws off the chemistry. Defensively, though, they can't get after the quarterback. And if you've listened to this podcast from about week two or three, we've been talking about it and hammering it home. They can't get after the quarterback. They're getting beat up in the trenches as well. You're looking at a team 20th in overall efficiency coming into the Jets game. And they let up nearly 6 yards per play to a Jets team that averages 5.4. So it wasn't great on that side of the ball either. I think offensively they're going to eventually be fine. It's just a chemistry thing, trying to get all these moving parts implemented in the system. Defensively, I don't know if there's going to be a lot of room for improvement there. You get rid of Jamie Collins. That was a huge cog. I get why they did it. But when you're in the midst of a playoff Super Bowl run, that's a huge loss.
It'll make things very interesting when we talk about some of the opposing offenses they may face through the AFC playoff picture, whether it's the Raiders, whether it's the Steelers. Probably the only two teams that can put enough pressure on New England's defense to provide real viable threats to representing the conference in the Super Bowl. But it'll be something worth watching. And Payne, from obviously the top of the heap to teams that are going just to kind of play out the stretch, identify some of the talent or lack thereof on their current rosters. We know there may be some value. I want to focus primarily on the state of Ohio. We know they got their big win on Saturday, most likely the Buckeyes cementing their spot in the college football playoff. But the professional variety of football being played in that state, nothing short of shambolic between the Cleveland Browns and if they'll ever offer value with their remaining four games, now 2-10 against the spread so far this season. And then how do we handle the Cincinnati Bengals moving forward? Clearly, this was a team that couldn't move the football even with A.J. Green and Gio Bernard with a lot of regularity. Now an offense that appears to be stuck in mud, although they did have chances against the Ravens, just could not get over the hump late in that contest.
Did the Buckeyes deserve to win this weekend?
Oh, are we going to open that? Well, we can no, get into the college football playoff a little bit. You know that I am not a Buckeye apologist by any stretch of the imagination. Do want to get your thoughts there on what we'll see going into that weekend, but let's focus on the NFL first and then we'll shift gears to college.
Let's address the Bengals. This is a team that took significant sharp money under, and again, I'll say this every single week, under 9.5 on their win total. So it was expected that they would be a little bit down this year. You lose Hugh Jackson, who's a great offensive mind. Zampezi's not very good. He runs a pop gun offense. It's not a very good offense. So this team isn't good. This last week was a last-ditch effort for them, I think, in terms of potentially being a playoff contender. It would have been a big win in the division. You needed that. The defense regressed tremendously. I was looking at this. A guy sent me a note here. Obviously, I get like little updates every Monday. But based on efficiency ratings, the Bengals defense hasn't been as bad since 2007. So 2007 was the last time their defense was this bad. And we've talked about the turnover at defensive coordinator. Zimmer, a few years ago, You lose Vance Joseph in the secondary. It's pretty obvious what coaching does, because what Vance Joseph is doing with that Dolphins defense, who might have four or five guys that you could say potentially would start on another NFL roster. The rest of the guys are just like a mash unit. His secondary was a weakness coming into this season. He's kind of just mixed and matched a bunch of guys, and Vance Joseph is getting it done. So that's been a huge loss to this Bengals defense, not having Vance Joseph there in the secondary. Their third down defense is horrific. I mean, you look at what Baltimore did to him this past week on the opening drives of that series, 3rd and 9, 3rd and 5. The first two touchdowns were nothing but 3rd and long completions. So that defense has really regressed. When it comes to the Browns, there's just not the nice way to put it, there's not a ton of talent there. So it'll be interesting to see.
That may be putting it mildly when you watch them.
It'll be interesting to see what they do, because I do like Hugh Jackson. I think, you know, they're stockpiling some draft picks. Hopefully, you know, they kind of spread those draft picks out and don't draft 37 wide receivers. But if they can spread those draft picks out and touch some key areas, specifically offensive line, and then obviously mostly defense, that's going to be key to them. Bad teams just do things to lose, and they do them at the most costly times. So when you look at that Giants game, the defense actually gave a great effort early on in that game. It was the offense that let him down. Crowell fumbles in his own end, middle of the second quarter in a 0-0 game, gives the Giants 7 points. The Browns make 2 trips inside the 7 in the first half. They settle for field goals both times. So they just do things at the most costly times, and that's what bad teams do. It's stuff that you can't really factor in metric-wise. And the same thing with the San Francisco game. It's a 7-7 game. Kaepernick hits, Celek over the middle. They're going in for a score. He fumbles the ball. You just can't put these things, you can't quantify them, and it's just what bad teams continue to do.
Hard to really factor into the handicapping numbers and exactly how to properly assess teams like the Browns, who yet again this past Sunday against the Giants saw some professional money, not only before the game taking that number from 7 down to 6.5, but also at halftime when they were about a 1-point underdog or half, depending on which shop you particularly chose to use.
You're spot on with the Browns. That was one of the sharpest positions of the day. Came in again at halftime. A lot of guys went first half, grabbed the 4.5, because we know this team's so thin. Prior to this past week, outscored 161-60 in the second half.
We talked a little bit about the Ohio State game on Saturday, and I think when you look at the ratings for that game, paying the highest rated college football game of the entire regular season. I'm not sure the execution was at an all-time high between those two teams, but it was definitely entertaining to watch, knowing the stakes that were on the line.
Yeah, Bama's in regardless. They could lose by like 8 touchdowns this week. They're in. But at this stage, you know, we kind of talk about this all the time. You just can't put the best 4 in based on our power rating. There has to be some type of deserving factor there. You have to be able to differentiate that a little bit. But I think you go with the best 4 that are semi-deserving, and then the huge plus that have a quarterback to potentially compete with Bama. You can get hot in a 1-game setting, and we know what Clemson's A game is. We've seen it some this year. We've seen it in the past. They haven't broken it out a lot. We saw it this past weekend. They absolutely just drubbed South Carolina. But I think you go Clemson, you go Washington, 2 quarterbacks that if they get hot in a 1-game setting can potentially win you that. Ohio State, because they won this weekend, and we know what Urban can do with 30 days prep. If it got to like a national championship game, I think with extra prep, Urban's tough to beat. But I didn't see a lot from them this weekend. I really didn't.
You're exactly right. Ohio State, I think, based on the strength of their resume, 5 top 10 wins. I know the committee will look at only 1 loss on the road at Penn State gets in. But over the last couple weeks, they clearly haven't looked like the offensive dynamo we saw earlier in the season. And now, all of a sudden, the game that we watched together down in Miami when they hung 62 on Nebraska doesn't look all that impressive when you consider the Iowa Hawkeyes were able to score 40 on the Cornhuskers defense. So those 4 are probably the most deserving, you know, full body of work. Is there a team, and I don't want to get too much onto this topic, that has really caught your eye as far as, you know, thinking they should be included? So much talk being made of USC being a top 10 team and them increasing their overall profile. But there's a team we watch that you have a close relationship to that I think's not getting enough credit for arguably finally starting to look like the team we expected them to be early in the season.
I think right now, And I don't want to play sour grapes, but you're talking about two plays for Florida State. You're talking about a 54-yard field goal against UNC. Obviously, you can't get down 21-0 at home on senior day. Just, you can't allow it. But a kid who's season-long, his career-long is 49 yards, bangs home a 54-yarder. And then you're talking about the missed call that Jimbo basically took a $20,000 fine on that became a 70-yard penalty and changed the outlook of the Clemson game. So you're talking about two plays. Florida State could be a one-loss team here. Talented is all get-up. I think if you talk to any real professional better, Florida State's favorite on a neutral field over a lot of these teams. They're favored on a neutral over Washington. That's for sure. No debating that one. And when you look at these other teams that are going to potentially vie to get in there, I know people talked about Wisconsin or the winner of the Big Ten championship potentially sneaking in there. Wisconsin hasn't beaten anybody. You know, you beat week one a guy who's no longer employed in Les Miles. You lost the two biggest games of the year to Michigan, Ohio State. The Nebraska win, as you alluded to, looks like absolute dog crap right now. You don't have a starting quarterback, really. You're playing, you know, merry-go-round there with your quarterback. So their best win to me is probably Nebraska.
Yeah, you know, I mean
LSU to start the year, but that was Les Miles. That team wasn't very good at that point. In Nebraska right now, after that loss, I'm going to hate the Nebraska people. I've been bashing them all year. They're going to fall out of the top 40 of our power rankings.
Yeah, I mean, this is it. I mean, you're exactly right. You look at what some of these teams have accomplished, and we become enamored with these so-called big wins that get diminished later in the season. And for folks who believe in this, hey, you have to be a conference champion to get into the college football playoff, that's nonsense. You know my opinions on that particular topic. Until every schedule in the country is created equally, you kind of throw that garbage out. The SEC East isn't on par with the SEC West. No one thinks that Florida is the second-best team in the conference and should be able to vie for a championship any more than we are led to believe that Wisconsin and Ohio State should realistically be playing for the conference championship. I think all of us believe the game that took place in Columbus had the two best teams in the Big Ten locking horns, but I completely digress.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, you know, we'll of course have discussions, maybe go back and revisit our college football bowl podcast that had a little bit of noise last year. So we'll talk about that. Obviously, any announcements as per additional content for our loyal listeners we'll make in the coming weeks. And you can get all of that information by following the podcast Twitter feed at BetTheBoardPod. Make sure you're checking out the website regularly as well, BetTheBoardPodcast.com. All sorts of great swag just in time for the holidays. You can follow Payne on Twitter at PayneInsider, and you can follow me on Twitter as well at Todd Furman. Payne, as we always like to do on Monday, kind of take a look at the numbers that have been adjusted based on 1 week's worth of results. And the Thursday night game, I think, is going to be pretty interesting. I can already almost guarantee you with 99.9% certainty, we'll have a pros versus Joes divide. Look ahead number had the Dallas Cowboys, a 2-point road favorite at US Bank Stadium, taking on the Minnesota Vikings. At last check, BetOnline listed the Cowboys as 3.5-point favorites. It was 3.5 even, so you had to lay a little bit of a price if you wanted back the home underdog. Did we see enough on Thanksgiving to make for a 1.5-point adjustment between these two teams that are very much relevant in the NFC playoff picture?
I'm not sure if that's what we saw on Thanksgiving Day. I'm just not sure that you can move the power rating as quickly as you'd like. You know, when you talk about your power numbers, you really don't, especially in the NFL, college football a little different, but in the NFL, you really don't want to make much more than a 1-point move week to week. And typically it's a tick. It's not even a full point, but if you're aggressive, it's a full point. So when we had Minnesota start this season like gangbusters, the offensive line was healthy, you had Adrian Peterson there, Diggs wasn't missing time. This was a team that we had probably, if I can recall, in the top three or four. And so, again, you don't want to make these crazy quick rush snap decisions, dropping them 3, 4, 5 points. But I think this is a case of not dropping them quick enough and not necessarily what we saw on Thanksgiving.
I think that's a fair assessment. Minnesota clearly a shell of their former team. I have to anticipate that when Dave comes on Thursday, Dave Mason, that is, will tell us that about 8 out of every 10 tickets are coming in on Dallas. Teams with normal rest, maybe the Cowboys better equipped to deal with this on back-to-back Thursdays. But should be a good game to try and watch and see if the Vikings can potentially pull off a home upset. We have yet to see the Packers play this week, Payne, and we've already seen adjustment in their number for next week on the look-ahead price, where Green Bay was listed as a 3.5-point home favorite against the Houston Texans. The Houston Texans went down at the hands of the San Diego Chargers, a game you told folks would move on the podcast last Tuesday. Not sure we anticipated they'd go from a 1-point underdog to a 3-point favorite in some shops, but right now you're looking at the Packers, a 4.5-point home favorite playing host to the Houston Texans at BetOnline.
We don't like the Texans, and we don't like...
Really? You don't say you don't like the Texans, huh?
I figured that move was probably... I think I maybe mentioned it like 7 or 8 times on that podcast that the Chargers
move. And I'll go on... I'll play bad guy. Well, I'm not sure really bad guy here. We did that on Tuesday. We recorded the podcast. We saw that number starting to go. You suggested that would make a great teaser leg. And then folks, to their credit, asking about if we saw investments worthwhile. We can't reiterate this enough and enough. If the number has moved, guys, we're not going to tell you to lay 2 with the Chargers or lay $1.40 on the money line if we're taking +1 in a football game. We've done it before with the Bengals-Giants game. We got burned by the 0.5. I think better safe than sorry. And Payne, you know, stop me if I'm wrong here. You know, that was the mindset for when we looked on the Sunday card. That was probably the best bet. Just didn't want to tell folks to go to the window with a bad number just to have action.
Yeah, I mean, there's two sides of that coin, and it's, is there still value at the current price? And if there is, you just adjust how much, you adjust your bet size based upon the value loss.
True.
But,
true.
Yeah, I don't really, for our listeners, I'm just not going to try to give them bad habits. And so it becomes this thing where a one-off situation where, you know, we take +1 and, you know, advise them to lay -2.5 becomes when they go on their own, because we know they're betting more games than what we're giving them, obviously. It's, oh, this game's now 6.5. I could have laid 4. Oh, I saw Bet the Board do that. It's fine. I'm going to do this too. So it just becomes this this thing. And you're going to watch now as we're recording this at 10:56 in the East. Eagles are going to be on the move here. if you're watching your screen. Yeah, so it's just, we're not trying to instill bad habits. That's the biggest thing here. But back to the Packers game. Obviously, a lot depends on what we see tonight. If this is an absolute dumpster fire of an effort and they go to 4-7, and you get a Houston team that at least, despite what we think of them, is going to give effort, it becomes... It's the reason this price is as short as it is. It becomes an effort thing. It becomes, do you want to be there kind of thing? And that's what we're going to have to gauge from tonight's game.
If we have this conversation on November 28th, 2017, is Jeff Fisher still the head coach of the Los Angeles Rams?
I thought they re-upped him, didn't they?
It's all relative in this. If he goes into the tank,
it is relative.
He goes into the tank.
It was just the weirdest time in the world to do that. For whatever reason, it's like he's got...
He must have videotape on Les Snead and...
He's got some pictures of something or somebody. Yeah, it's unbelievable. The guy stinks. His offensive mind is from 1930. You know, the drafting of the offensive players, not very good as well. We saw, you know, the guy in Robinson that they thought was going to be their staple left tackle. He was a clean scratch this week. So the offensive line isn't very good. It's why we've seen Gurley really take a step back. Defenses are focusing on him. It's very simple. Stop Gurley. That's it. Make someone else beat us. If they do, if Case Keenum, if Goff beats us, you tip your cap and say, good game, sir. And that's it. It's the defense, and it's Gurley, and there's nothing else there. The offensive line isn't very good. You gave Tavon Smith all this money. He's a nice gimmick player. He's not an elite wide receiver.
You're not buying Tavon Austin as the second coming of Julio Jones out there, catching balls in the flat, forcing defenses to respect his every move, no matter where he lines up in the formation, Payne?
Kenny Britt. This is a guy that nearly found himself out of the league. It's been a nice story, but he's basically putting up numbers is a byproduct of no other weapons being there. There's been nothing done offensively. The same questions that when they drafted Sam Bradford are still question marks now. And you're going to go the same route. Goff is going to be the same thing if you cannot get him weapons or an offensive line to protect him.
Yeah, it's really incredible what the Rams have done or haven't done, so to speak, offensively. Made no strides going forward. And I think that was really indicative in that 14-10 loss against the Dolphins 2 weeks ago, where Miami puts together the two late drives, gets the win in a game the Rams deserved a much better fate. This number pain surprised me a bit. Look ahead price, we're seeing the San Diego Chargers, a 5.5-point chalk at home against Tampa. After a weekend where San Diego goes on the road, beats the Texans pretty convincingly, Tampa at home beats the Seahawks 14-5 in a game we thought the Seahawks could be flattened. Don't want to diminish the win and what it means for Tampa, especially in the big picture. But to see the number on this game move from 5.5 to 3.5, where it currently sits at BetOnline, trending down a bit, does that surprise you at all that we're talking about a two-point adjustment with two teams who won the game last weekend and actually look good in doing so?
Yeah, I think we talk about this Chargers team and we've hyped them up all season long, and they've been, you know, riddled with injuries and some misfortune. But I think the general public sees this team. They're still below 500. You see a Bucs team that's kind of surging. Jameis Winston kind of in the spotlight. And they've won back-to-back games on the road at Kansas City. We saw what they did on national TV last night, and that's kind of the thought process. Seattle, they'd been fantastic. We saw what they did on national TV to Tom Brady. So you get this perception, and I can tell you, I know they're in the playoff hunt. They've won three in a row. You know, the market indicators sky high in them, but I would think if this got to three, you would see some sharp money on the Chargers.
Team that's not going to be in the playoff hunt, and you can probably put the official nail in their coffin after their performance in Atlanta over the weekend, the Arizona Cardinals and Carson Palmer. This game on a look-ahead number had the Cardinals listed as 3.5-point home favorites against the Washington Redskins. Right now at BetOnline, you're seeing the Cardinals 2.5-point chalk minus $1.20. I'm not even going to begin to offer any major thoughts on how I want to try and look at Arizona moving forward, because clearly the market hasn't caught up to the dumpster fire this team has become, not only on the offensive side, but the defenses look pretty pedestrian in recent weeks as well.
Similar situation to what we had with Cincinnati, and a similar situation to what we will see unfold tonight on Monday Night Football. And it's last-ditch efforts, and so far, neither Arizona or Cincinnati were able to come through in those spots. These were last-ditch efforts, and we have this same spot again with Green Bay tonight. We didn't see it. This Cardinals team, I love Arians, but for 2 years now, I've come on this podcast and say something is missing. I know what the metrics say. I know what the numbers say. I know what the yards per play say. I know what the efficiency says. There's something missing, and we're finally seeing it here come full circle this season. So what do they have left in the tank? What are they playing for at this point? It will be interesting to see. I'm not quite sure.
You mentioned the Packers, Payne, in a last-ditch effort. Of course, we'll see them tonight against Philadelphia. The Monday Night Football Big Game Breakdown brought to us courtesy of the American Gaming Association. You can check out all the work they do for legalization and their ongoing efforts at AmericanGaming.org. Follow them on Twitter at Ammer, A-M-E-R, Gaming, G-A-M-I-N-G. ASSN. It is the mission of the AGA to be the single most effective champion of the industry, relentlessly protecting against harmful and often misinformed public policies and paving a path for growth, innovation, and reinvestment. If you'd like to sign up for their newsletters and get real-time updates right to your inbox, americangaming.org/about/contact. And of course, mark your calendars. A week from today, we will have CEO Jeff Freeman of the American Gaming Association on this podcast. Maybe get him to pick a game or two, but more importantly, to talk about some of their ongoing initiatives and where they stand with the single game legalization, a realistic timetable, and a lot of other things that'll factor into the industry. So if you do have questions, you can submit those to us on the Bet the Board Pod Twitter feed. Use the hashtag AGA, and we'll see if we can incorporate those into our discussion. Packers-Eagles tonight, Payne, you mentioned some money. Philadelphia, a 4-point favorite in this game. We'll call the total 47.5.
When it comes to the NFL, it's all about film. It's a copycat league, and it's really tough to mask what's going on with Green Bay's secondary, and we've hit on this now for a couple months, and it got worse this past week against the Redskins. There was a couple injuries in game that happened, and I kid you not, they're starting backup safeties at cornerback. And it really doesn't matter who you play. It could be Cody Kessler. It could be McCown. It's the NFL. And a quarterback is going to take advantage of situations like that. And in comes, you got Philadelphia, much better at home, obviously. But they run this system that's a lot of crossing routes, a lot of short passing routes. And it's going to be a tall task to ask safeties to guard some of these routes. So from a matchup perspective, clearly power number probably doesn't say 4.5 here. But from a power number perspective, there's probably value on Green Bay. But I can't do it. We're going to see extremely sharp money on Philadelphia. We've started to see it trickle in as we're recording this. 3.5 is completely gone. 4 now trending to 4.5. And it's because of that matchup. It's because of Philadelphia, what they do at home. When you're young, you want to get the sense of familiarity. So Wentz has been much better at home. He feels more comfortable at home. You get out on the road into situations that you're not used to. You tend to get frazzled. You don't know what you don't know. But when you're home, you're comfortable. It's where you like to be as a human being. It's human nature. So that's really what we're seeing here. And defensively, still number one in overall efficiency. They faced a tough slate of offenses too. So this defense led by Schwartz, who we've been calling since, again, if you've listened to this podcast since week one or two, Schwartz is going to end up getting another head coaching job. His defense is fantastic. And not only are they number one in efficiency, but they've done it facing the number one offensive slate of schedules. So it's no fluke here. And you're going to look at a Green Bay team and why this total is starting to tick up. And we talked about this a little bit. Probably true numbers wise, this total should be about 45.5, 46. But you always have to factor in the game theory, the game plan. And Green Bay right now probably is going to be pretty one-dimensional. I'm not sure you're going to be able to go and run at Philadelphia. I really don't think you can run on them. So maybe from the onset, it's a lot of spread these guys out. If there is question marks on this Philadelphia defense, it's in their secondary. And you see this game where we saw last week, it's let Aaron Rodgers do his thing. And that's why we've seen this total tick up as well.
You mentioned the home road disparity we've seen from the Eagles about having a young quarterback in Carson Wentz feeling more comfortable in familiar surroundings. Do we have to account for more than just simple home field advantage when we're handicapping the Eagles? I know the baseline, and of course, you know, you and I don't ascribe to every home field being worth 3 points, but that's general consensus, and I think a good way for some of the novice handicappers to try and approach it. Do we have to account for even more than that with Philadelphia playing at home, given how much different we've seen not only Wentz play, but also the defense when they're in their own building?
Yeah, you know, you probably do this. They probably go from an average home field advantage of currently what we're using of 2.5. They're probably a 3 right now. They're a full 3. There's no doubt about that. We saw what they did in some settings. Obviously, Browns week one, not a great win, but Wentz, you know, opening start, they just decimate a good Steelers team. They do have some flaws, and we saw what they did to the Falcons. That was a game that we were on. So this is, I believe, just their fourth home game, or do they play the Vikings home as well, which was another
Yeah,
one.
They had the Vikings at home as well. They had the Vikings at home as well.
So this is their fifth home game. So they're now loaded on the back half of the schedule with some home games, and they're going to have a chance to make a little run here at 5-5. Now, I hate to say that, holding an under 7.5 win ticket, but this backloaded schedule at home, it's a good home field advantage. Again, it's where Wentz feels comfortable. He's going to need to get some help from his receivers. Now, I initially didn't want to ascribe to this that he's got no weapons, because you look up and down that roster and you talk about Ertz, a second round pick, Aguilar, first round pick, Matthews, a second round pick. You got Sproles, who's probably been the most prolific
ageless wonder back there. Ageless wonder.
Falk. Yeah, so there's a lot of weapons there when you look at that, but man, they do. They have a ton of drops, and it looks like no Matthews tonight. He was a key cog in getting that ground game going. It'll be a full dose of rookie Wendell Smallwood out of West Virginia. He's been pretty good in small doses. He's been gaining the confidence of the coaching staff. He's been taking that next step, getting more carries the last few weeks, so it'll be probably his entire full workload along with some rolls out of the backfield. I just think, you know, if you can probably get some 4, that's what one of the sharper groups did. I haven't bet it. I probably won't be on it. I think it'll be interesting to see what the prop market looks like, because now we're trending back towards most people being a little bit down on Carson Wentz. You know, they like to run the ball, so I'm not sure there's going to be a ton of opportunity there, but I'm going to take a gander at some Carson Wentz passing props, because that short passing game could really eat the secondary alive when you're talking about starting, you know, backup safeties at cornerback.
And you mentioned one last thing on this game, as we've talked about, probably a real tough game to navigate through, and I don't think any investment opportunity that some of our listeners should be running to the window to try and make Philadelphia's schedule. Packers tonight at Cincinnati, home against the Redskins, at the Ravens, home against the Giants, home against the Cowboys. Are they a viable threat to sneak into the NFC playoff picture and maybe secure that number six seed?
When you really break down this schedule a little bit, you talk about the Packers tonight. What are they? We know sharp money is on Philadelphia, so let's just say there's a win there. You go to Cincinnati, usually a tough place to play. What are they at this point? Without A.J. Green, they lost their Super Bowl this past week. Where are they mentally? Now, the Washington game they get at home, that'll be a tightly contested game. You travel to the Ravens. That's a physical team and a very good defense, so that's going to be a tough game. Then you face the overrated Giants, who you're going to have absolutely every chance to beat. You're going to be a home favorite there unless a massive injury occurs. And then you face the Cowboys the last week of the season. My feeling is, and this is going to be interesting, because now that I think about this as I was about to say it, are the Cowboys playing for anything at that point?
No.
They might have the entire NFC locked up. They might be sitting guys. So you get a favorable situation there. But now that I say this, do you start potentially QB controversy and go to your backup, who's now Tony Romo? So that'll be an interesting game to watch. The schedule is very favorable. You get a bunch of home games and then your road games potentially against teams that don't have a lot to play for.
You brought the energy level this morning. I'm proud of you after a 4 or 5 day. Well, what do you want to call it? You want to call it a bender, a binge? What terminology should we use?
We went through some bottles of Tito's. That's there's no doubt about that. I try to not be, you know, I go to the Tito's press now, trying to get away from all the juices and the sugars. So typically the little Tito's press there does wonders. But I did change it up a little bit. There's this V8 Splash Berry Blend thing here. And I'm not a big V8 Splash guy, but going Tito's Club Soda Splash of this V8 Berry Blend thing has been fantastic.
Look at you. Not only does he bet NFL games like a consummate professional and share the best information, he is a part-time mixologist for you as we head into the holidays. Payne, always a pleasure, my friend. Folks can follow you on Twitter at Payne Insider. They can follow me on Twitter at Todd Furman. And of course, Bet the Board Podcast at Bet the Board Pod. Check out the website, bettheboardpodcast.com. We'll be right back here with you on Thursday, previewing all things NFL Week 13. And hopefully we'll see you at the window.